it's Depeche Mode, the band. Depeche Mode, that's who I want to talk about. In particular, the Depeche Mode song Blasphemous Rumors, arguably one of the most Depeche Mode-y of all the songs in the Depeche Mode catalog. I don't want to start any blasphemous rumors, it goes, but I think that God has a sick sense of humor, and when I die, I expect to find him laughing. Laughing. British. And rumors is spelled with a U because, you know, England. The idea here is that some of the situations we humans find ourselves in are so absurd and ridiculous that it seems like they must have been designed as part of a prank by God, an impractical jokers kind of affair. The lyrics to that song, by the way, just a bucket of triggers, so proceed with caution. Now, here's something likewise absurd and kind of funny, but you won't laugh out loud. To make art, an artist often needs to be in touch with a kind of human frailty and vulnerability, right? But to exist in the profession of the arts in our society, that artist needs tremendous toughness and almost invulnerability, solid, thick armor. Like we say to the artist, okay, great, make us some beautiful art, please. And also, by the way, a lot of other people want to make art as well, so the competition will be fierce, and hardly anybody wants to pay you for it anymore. But you also need those fierce competitors to be your friends, as well as your closest rivals. Good luck, you're doomed. Good luck. That's how it's set up in art. That's why God is laughing in the song by Depeche Mode. And I'll put away Depeche Mode because that's not what this podcast is. It's Depeche Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. We're going to talk about art today, and we'll talk to an artist. And also, and this is important, in a sense, we're all artists in that we all make stuff. We all try to make sense of our world. We all try to interpret it back to ourselves and others, sometimes in the form of a painting or a song, sometimes in the form of a conversation or a relationship or any kind of act that we conduct in the world. We're all makers. And some of us, especially those of us who congregate around this show, some of us have some pretty interesting brains and some challenges. Elizabeth Ito is a person prone to anxiety and depression. She works in animation. Elizabeth has been part of the creative teams on shows like Adventure Time and Phineas and Ferb. She's also the creator of the Netflix series City of Ghosts. It's a project that came from her heart, all about her city of Los Angeles. And the show turned out beyond beautiful, critically adored. It's like life-affirming. So much so that she won a Peabody Award for it, an award she got only after the show was canceled by Netflix after one season, 6 episodes. City of Ghosts is an animated show about a kid named Zelda and her group of friends who have formed a ghost club. They go around LA and they talk to ghosts about local history, indigenous people, Oaxacan musicians, Japanese-American internment camps and racism.
You know, the JA community that were put into camps.
You went to camp?
Well, it wasn't like summer camp. My family got sent to internment camps. And we were ridiculed a lot, and even I was too, when I was going to school. I hated history because when we get to World War II, I just felt that discrimination, like we were the perpetrators. I felt like I didn't fit in anywhere. My cafe was a place where all different kinds of people would be welcomed, especially like punks and weirdos, all the misfits.
It was a place where Elizabeth Ito created the show in part as a way of helping with anxiety, and not her own.
When I first had kids, I was finding it really hard to find stuff that first, like, didn't cut around a lot, but second, it was quiet enough for my son. A lot of stuff has tension in it. I think it's built that way because for whatever reason, like we think that's what gets people to pay attention. Another one was the biggest thing was just wanting to have a show that kind of showed kids about changing neighborhoods and the changing history of this city that I've lived in for my whole life, and to kind of preserve some amount of showing what those neighborhoods are before they get gentrified or before they just kind of get taken over by just something that isn't reflective of the history of that neighborhood. So you sort of just notice about the architecture of the place that once in a while there's something that just doesn't fit. Like you're kind of like, why does that look like that? So I think it was just a desire to find out about places like that and just to like find out more about this city.
Yeah. So it's history and it's a different kind of storytelling. About the dialogue in it, people aren't sitting down and writing out a script for everything everybody says. Tell us a little bit how that the dialogue works in City of Ghosts.
I was really inspired by stuff like there are these shorts by this animator, Nick Park, called Creature Comforts, where it's like presented as interviewing animals in the zoo about what it's like to be in the zoo. But he actually like recorded real people to do it. And I always found that so charming. And just, I just really like shows that kind of felt like that. Like I really was a fan of The British Office because it felt kind of real. And then also like This American Life, I was of course like a big fan. And I think like I first started having this approach when I did a short about my brother for Cartoon Network where I made him like a monster in high school because I had read something he wrote about himself and I felt like it just reflected something I didn't know about him. But I also felt like I really want to try doing something in a way where like I really record him and then I just turn him and my family into characters instead of themselves that maybe represent the topic that I'm trying to show.
Yeah, and that's Welcome to My Life.
Yeah.
My name's Douglas, but my friend Brian and all my friends usually call me T-Cash.
Where does the T-Cash come from?
It's kind of like a rap name that I came up with. My nickname, it's a short version of my middle name, Takeshi. I got that name from my grandma. She said that my middle name, Takeshi, is actually a word for strong in Japanese.
Is it common for monsters to have Japanese names?
I mean, it seems like Japanese monsters are pretty common to like cinema. But I don't know if like regular, you know, people would know like, oh, that's like a normal thing.
And then so it's the same sort of idea for this. It was like really wanting to reflect, I don't know, like all the humor that real people have and the way that they talk. So many unexpected things.
In City of Ghosts, the actors playing the kids ask their own questions, ask what's on their minds. And the ghosts are real people around LA, just being themselves and answering honestly, but with the small adjustment that they're pretending to be ghosts.
My name is Bagel. I'm from Venice. So what's this interview for?
It's for our club. We try to talk to every ghost we meet on the record.
That's awesome. Very cool.
So what was it like growing up here?
Skateboarding was a huge part of mine and my friends' identities growing up in Venice, skateboarding and surfing. Venice was the Mecca back in the day. It was very chaotic.
It's interesting the approach to kind of a more sensitive, kind of a gentler story where there isn't the life and death conflict. I remember when my son's 21 now, but when he was 3 or 4 years old, he couldn't make it through a Curious George episode. Like he could watch Star Wars with the Death Star blowing up, but if Curious George was getting in trouble and the tension was building and building, he just had to get out of there.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the ones we tried to watch. Like I think it was maybe like the Curious George movie. I was like, oh, this will be a no-brainer.
Silly little monkey having
fun.
Yeah,
and like, I want to say maybe 3 minutes into it. I don't like this. Too scary or it's bad.
Someone's getting in trouble. Did that make it harder to make the show, to get approval that there wasn't like a bad guy and the third act climactic crisis and the whole formula?
It has been hard to sell this approach sort of like to different studios along the way. I think Netflix was actually maybe the easiest because at the time that I came in the door, they were still very like, you get to do whatever you want. You don't have to listen to too many notes from execs. You should just think about it yourself. But I think like those types of things still creep in, whether it's you need tension or it's actually, I'm going to use the example that ended up being useful. Like, I think somebody had mentioned at some point, we didn't see a kid on screen for this amount of minutes, and we should see a kid on screen because kids really want to see kids on screen. And I was sort of like, well, I don't really like the approach of like clocking the amount of minutes. But I think backing up a little bit, I was like, well, maybe there is something to keeping their attention some way. So that can be beneficial. But yeah, it's just hard because you'll get somebody saying, yeah, I think we need a little bit more attention. And I think the comedy was actually hard to convince people that that's what was going on, because I feel like a lot of the jokes are really, really subtle and strange.
More with Elizabeth Ito in just a moment. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best. Because obviously, there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh.
It could happen to you. You're all grown up now, a professional adult with diverse interests and hobbies, and one of those hobbies is video games.
You just can't help it. They're so good now.
If that's you, we're here to tell you, you are completely normal.
I'm Maddie Myers.
I'm Jason Schreier.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton, and together we form Triple Click, a podcast about video games.
If you think you might be a person who likes video games, we hope you'll give Triple Click a listen.
Triple Click, new episodes every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Back with Elizabeth Ito. She grew up in the LA area, went to Cal Arts, which is like the Hogwarts of the animation world. And when Elizabeth got out, she wasn't just drawn to the artwork side of animation. She got work in creating stories, and that involved art and words and storyboarding, the whole thing.
I was was really into illustrated children's books, and I wanted to do that as a job, as I think the first thing that I ever wanted to do. Because I think at that point, I didn't think that there was a different person that drew the book than wrote the book. So I just figured you just do it all.
Yeah. Why did you want to do it so badly?
I don't know. I liked it. I like to draw. I like to just mentally get lost in where I was at in the drawing or what I was imagining. And then I think once I got out of CalArts, I just sort of, the first jobs that I managed to get ended up being story jobs. I don't think I had the idea that that was going to be what I went into. I just sort of wanted to be in something where I could still draw. And since with animation, so much pivoted to just being CG, I was like, well, can't really animate that well in CG, or I guess drawn-wise, I wasn't like a super tight animator either, but I still want to have a job where I get to draw these things out, and I think I'm pretty good at drawing funny things, so, and then I ended up, yeah, getting into story, which I ended up really liking.
That's great. I've combed through your Twitter feed because I have to be that kind of nosy for the show, and you've talked a lot about anxiety. Were you an anxious kid?
I think so. I don't think I knew really what that was until I was older. But yeah, I was really anxious. I was really nervous. Just like, I think like I have a mental picture of myself being a lot more socially awkward than I actually am. Inside, I feel a lot like really messed up. But like when I'll say to my mom or something like, oh, I think one time I told her, I think I'm really shy or introverted. And she was like, no way. Like laughed it off. Like, obviously you're not. And then I remember also after a pitch once, I was like, I think I asked Jorge Gutierrez, like, how did it go in your opinion? And he said, oh, you seemed so like calm and zen. And I was so, like so shocked and confused. Like, I don't think so, but okay.
Didn't match what was happening inside anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would find it kind of surprising that somebody who is prone to anxiety would go into a field where it is so high wire so much of the time. Like you're always on the verge of unemployment. You're trying to get ideas pitched. You're on the spot. And if it goes well, great things can happen. If it doesn't, it could be a disaster. How do those two things match up that you've always been that way and then there you are?
They don't match up at all. None of it makes any sense. Even just the basic, my first job, I think about this a lot, like how kind of just incredible it is to think about. If I was to pick the job where you're like the most in front of people and having to act stuff out, which I kind of hate.
Oh, yeah.
It's like story. Like you have to pitch these boards in front of people like you're a salesman, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think at the beginning, it was really hard to adapt. I kind of had to not drink coffee before pitches because my stomach would get all messed up and like sweat like crazy and feel really embarrassed and get shaky voice. Somebody, I think, tried to tell me the thing where it's like, try to make it feel like you're excited instead of anxious. And I don't know. I don't think it really works for me. I kind of know that I'm anxious, but like, I'm one of those people where it's like a dual thing, you know, like while I do get anxious and I don't necessarily present myself as somebody that likes to be in front of people and do risky things, like nervous causing things, I do somewhat enjoy performance. So it's sort of like having to learn like, well, what am I feeling like right at this moment? Or like, how do I get myself into the mode where I'm presenting something or stuff like that? So it's like, I've only kind of figured that out through like going to therapy, but like talking to my therapist about it, he was very much like, yeah, I think there's a part of you that does enjoy being up there and being a leader and managing things. I just think like there's probably another part of you that's introverted that you have to just figure out where where that balance is.
Do you think everybody has that duality?
I think it's like a scale is what I've been told. You're not necessarily just sort of like one or the other. Sometimes you can be all one. So I guess in that case, you would be one or the other. But I think most people, it's somewhere in between.
Do you try to do that excitement trick, like turn the anxiety into enthusiasm?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes I have to, like, I played piano as a kid and I would have to do recitals and stuff. So there's just were different sort of like concentration tricks to sort of get control of your anxiety a little bit.
So when you're in nervous making, and I'm, you know, this is the show we are. So we're going to talk about your anxiety more than I would if I was having lunch with you. Okay, good. It seems like you have a lot of stories that you tell that are very personal to you. They, you know, you interview your brother or you talk about your community and the history of it, and especially the people who have been displaced over the years in that community. Does that conviction of the story that you have to tell power you through the anxiety? How does that exactly work?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for this project, it really helped to find people that maybe can unload.
Is this for City of Ghosts?
Yeah, like where delegating certain things helps to sort of lessen my anxiety. One example is doing the show. It's like having to approach somebody about wanting them to be on the show and finding out whether or not they'd be into it. Like when I was a student, it would have just been me like having to go up to somebody, or before I sort of like learned how a show works and that you can get people to do things for you, I worried like, am I gonna have to go up to all of these people and like ask them to be on my show and do all of these things? And that's sort of where I was like, oh, that's where I get to get a documentary producer who's like a pro at doing that. Or I get to get just like a producer in general that knows how to talk about that part of it. Or for the records, I think it was knowing that doc producer was going to be there and able to ask the questions. So the majority of my role could just be to listen to the story. I would still get kind of nervous because it's just interacting with new people always makes me like a little bit nervous. But I think it was a conviction, and it's just like a, like almost like an absolute enjoyment of listening for those. It's a combination of things. It's like touching stories and then also like really comedic things that people say as like asides or just the way that they describe something. That part of it, it gets me really excited in a way that sort of just like I forget about being anxious.
Yeah. So you make the show, you get everybody to be in it, and you get everybody to help you with it. So, you know, it's and you make something that I'm sure you are proud of, something beautiful that came out. What was it like when that comes out? Because it's not like Nielsen ratings, I imagine. You don't read in the newspaper how your show did. How could you assess how it was going once it was online?
It was really hard to assess. I mean, I thought it was going extraordinarily well for not having a lot of buildup, in my opinion. I think Netflix's approach to marketing seemed a little bit like too short for me, but I think I was trying to judge it by just like, what were people saying? Like, how was Twitter reacting? Like, what kinds of messages was I getting? It was mostly like Twitter and Instagram that I was looking at the time. It was really difficult because it was like during the height of pandemic and people were only barely coming out. So I had thought, I wish I could like go screen this somewhere, just like project it somewhere myself just so we could be outside. But yeah, it was really confusing for me, I think, in that particular moment.
What did that do for your anxiety?
Well, I was actually really happy, I think, about how it seemed like it was going. But I think always when anything releases and you're paying attention to the internet, there's a special kind of like anxiety about that particular thing. I think I had to sort of like not be constantly refreshing and doing that, but I still was. And I think that part of it was wrecking me. So there was a point like after the release where I was like, oh, I feel like just wasted because of all of the energy that I was expending on this ridiculous amount of social media that I'm not built for that.
Yeah, you say you got kind of wrecked by it. How did that manifest in you?
I don't know. It's like, it's really just this feeling of being kind of unwell. It's hard to describe, where it feels like you've been sucked in and hyper-focused too much on this minutia that when I really backed up and thought about it, I'm like, this is out of my control. Why am I paying attention to this? And then just these thoughts of like, okay, well, I need to put some put some controls on Twitter, first of all, so I'm not seeing everything, because seeing everything is too much. Mm. And maybe thoughts of, if I have to do this in the future, how can I make this a more mentally manageable situation so it doesn't feel so exhausting at the end? I think I just had to take a break, like practically speaking, for a little bit. I backed away from Twitter and Instagram for a spell.
I wonder if there's like an instinct that people would have to, you know, if you're going to release something, like it's a such a big release to go out in the world, you almost expect an echo back, you know, you almost expect the bounce back, but all there is the void. It's got to be disorienting.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough not to have personal contact. I mean, one nice thing was that we tried to arrange like a small, safe release party where some of the crew would come in like groups, and then we hung out on the deck at my house. I think there were a couple people that had managed to get their first vaccine shot, so that was cool. But I mean, it was just also like so much else was going on in the world.
Yeah, it's the void plus the pandemic at the same time.
Yeah, I did not expect any of what's happening in this moment to be this way.
So what do you do then if you're, you know, if you're a person prone to anxiety, you made this show, you love it, you put it out in the world, you don't know how it's doing, there is a pandemic, like how do you occupy yourself other than constantly refreshing your social media feeds?
I don't know. I guess it was like getting wrapped up in all the other hobbies that everybody got like acquired. Uh-huh. I think bread baking was over by that point.
The sourdough starters had stopped.
Yeah. Part of it was just taking a breather. Like I think going and trying to take a small trip, but it was also just on top of like my kids being in school, sort of in school. I forget if they were back in person yet. I think one of them might have been, but I don't know. It's like a haze of a time. So
Yeah. You mentioned work that you've done with your therapist about your anxiety. When did you start therapy?
I think like 2010 or ish, like around.
So you go way back.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, after I started going, was sort of like mad at myself that I hadn't tried it out sooner. There was a lot to learn and unpack about the way that I am and like just sort of like my personality, that prior to that I had thought it would be so great to just be a robot and not have any feelings and you just, you know, beep boop. And I think that's pretty misguided. But yeah.
Is the anxiety the main thing you've worked on with your therapist over the years?
Yeah, I think anxiety and depression, because they kind of go together.
Yeah, the Hall and Oates of mental illness.
Yeah.
How far back does the depression go?
I don't know. Like, to be honest, like, I think there's just been spells where I've been depressed, and maybe I just didn't classify it correctly. Probably just this, like, thought to myself of, like your inner voice that's like, just get over it. What is wrong with you? Why can't you just deal with it, kind of thing? Or I think also just dealing with my tendency to sort of, this sounds so weird because like you're talking to me and you're probably like, oh, she seems really nice. But like I get really enraged and angry when I start getting depressed and anxious, because I just get really, like, I didn't like feeling vulnerable. So I think it's like whenever I sort of felt too vulnerable, I would get that way because
you'd get angry.
I don't know, it's just, yeah, I think like I had this conditioning that it felt like vulnerability was like a weakness. So I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Well, first of all, most really nice people I know do have that side where they just get really enraged.
Yeah.
I think that's completely normal. What would happen in those times when the anger was spiking?
Just shouting and trying to make whoever I was shouting at the angriest and saying, I don't know, mean things where
Family, coworkers?
Both. Mostly like family or like relationship partner.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I guess like I think it was having moments like that, but then not having any tools about how do you repair stuff after that? What do you do?
Is that something you've worked on with the therapist then?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Have these things, the anxiety, the depression, the anger, have those interfered with your relationships and your career?
I don't know. I mean, I want to say like, yeah, but I feel like it's more trying to protect my own just like general health from having a career where there's a sort of like a lot of unfair things that happen a lot where you're just sort of like in being in like Hollywood or being in just even like the animation industry. I think there's just been a lot of instances where I didn't have somebody to process with me like, why was I feeling this way? Or why is this thing making me so angry? Or am I wrong here for like feeling this way or reacting this way? And yeah, just not having any sort of professional person to help me analyze these situations that were happening and just sort of being lost and only really being able to deal with it through these feelings that I didn't understand.
Did you think, oh, well, people just feel this way? This is the way life works? Or did you identify that as like, oh, is there something going wrong here?
Well, to be totally honest, I think part of it was I had just recently gotten married and we were getting in these really big fights about things. And I think I really valued that relationship, this relationship. Like, I'm still married, so it ended up working out.
Yeah.
But like, it was just thinking like, this doesn't feel right. This feels like we need somebody to help talk to us about what's happening here. I think we're both in need of somebody to help us work this out. So I think it started with that. And then it ended up just being like this tree of helpfulness, you know, where it was like, oh, okay. So now that I'm learning how to fix and repair and manage my feelings in this personal relationship, it's making me realize the effect that some of these outside forces, because both of us also work in the same industry, and that has its own difficulty where like you're dealing with people treating you differently or like recognizing one person or not the other and stuff like that, where that stuff can kind of seep into whatever's going on at home because you're sort of carrying it with you all the time.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well, and it's not like one of you works at a bank, you know, you're both coming from this chaotic industry.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it was absolutely necessary for us to like manage working in entertainment and also in the same general field. And yeah, all that comes with that. Cause I'm married to like a tall white man. So like, he's obviously going to have a much different experience at work than I do.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not now cause I like won a Peabody Award, but like it takes that, I think, for it to almost level out.
Almost. Yeah. More with Elizabeth Ito in just a moment.
Hey, kid. Your dad tell you about the time he broke Steven Dorff's nose at the Kids' Choice Awards?
In Dead Pilot Society, scripts that were developed by studios and networks but were never produced are given the table reads they deserve.
When I was a kid, I had to spend my Christmas break filming a PSA about angel dust. So yeah, being a kid sucks sometimes.
Presented by Andrew Reich and Ben Blacker. Dead Pilot Society, twice a month on MaximumFun.org.
You know, the show you like, that hobo with the scarf who lives in a magic dumpster.
Doctor Who?
Yeah!
Back with Elizabeth Ito, animator and TV showmaker and Peabody Award winner. When that news came out, that news about winning the Peabody, Elizabeth immediately made a video where she went around to many of the locations that inspired City of Ghosts and she danced to this song that you're hearing now. It's by the musician Billy Changer. When did you find out that City of Ghosts was not to continue, was to not move forward? Because we're not saying cancellation for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, like, part of it was before the show came out. Like, if I'm really honest, I would kind of go, hey, do you guys want to talk about, like, writing more or something like that? And it was like,
the
billboard
on Sunset Boulevard when that goes up.
Yeah. So my exec was kind of like, we'll talk about that after the show comes out because they really have to see how it does. And I was like, okay. There was like maybe a meeting, I think, about a month after it came out where it was pretty much that meeting. Like after that meeting, it was like, well, we showed you the data, so it didn't do as well as we hoped. And then it wasn't like at the end of that meeting. It was just like a couple meetings after with individual people. And I think where they were just like, yeah, we're not really going in that direction anymore. So maybe if you have any other ideas or there's any other projects here you want to work on, let us know. Yeah. So it was like that.
If you'd like to help out with Is It Cake, you know, give us a call.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how did you take that?
You know, I was frustrated just in there's like definitely like a justice component to like my personality where it's like, I want things to be fair. I just did not, I guess, agree with the thought that like it didn't perform well. I almost like don't care whether they decided to do more or not. Like I already got the feeling they're not into this kind of show. Because the kinds of stuff they were recommending for me to try to create just wasn't like anything about City of Ghosts. Like all of it was very standard. So it was just wanting this thing that I don't think you can ever expect to get from like a corporation. Like it was wanting just the transparency of saying, we're not making more, but it's not because it didn't succeed. It's because we just decided we don't want to make that kind of thing. We want to make something that's like a McDonald's fast food instead of your show. So I think it was just like, I've never really gotten over like grappling with the frustration of that so much.
Yeah. And then you win a Peabody.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah.
What did that do for your sort of mental health makeup after the events of the show?
Oh, I felt great.
Yeah.
I felt really validated. I don't know. Like, yeah, but it's also the same thing. Like it's a trip right now to have these like, yeah, an incredible accolade. And it's like, I didn't go anywhere. I sat in a hotel room that I was at the time and made a, made a video.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It's just that constant thought to me of like, we are living in times that I've never expected to experience in my life. I'm trying to be celebratory about this thing, but it's like a strange experience.
Did it feel like justice or did it feel like a miscarriage of justice?
I felt like justice. I think, okay. Yeah, that's a sort of like why I made this video of myself going around the city, like dancing in front of things. Cause, I felt like that was the right thing for the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still think in terms of, you know, you talk about your son being a sensitive person and I think you're a sensitive person as well. I mean, that's what makes a good artist. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think, screw this, it's just too much, it's too much of a roller coaster, it's too harsh, like, you know, put your heart out on the line, put your brother and your parents in an animated show and then send them out to be judged by strangers in a corrupt industry? Do you ever just say, screw it, maybe I'll open an antique store or something?
Yeah, I mean, I have had these weird thoughts. Maybe that's why I think about this. But one time I was driving, I think, around LA somewhere, and me and my husband saw this this like hoagie shop on the side of the road, and it had like, I don't know, just like some Harleys parked in front of it. And I was like, it's really weird to imagine like the alternate universe where like I decided to open up a hoagie shop and I'm like really into Harleys. I was like, but it's kind of cool. Like, who would you be in that scenario? Like, who would I meet as like the hoagie shop owner? So I think occasionally I do have these fantasies of what would it be like if I just went and shelved books at the library instead of this.
Mm-hmm. But that's probably just leading you to make an animated show about someone shelving books at the library or running a hoagie shop.
For sure.
Yeah. Are you better mentally for having been on this roller coaster of making this show, having it fritter away, and then getting the Peabody?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, I'm not negating the Peabody, but, like, I think even before the Peabody, I felt pretty satisfied that I had made this thing that I said I wanted to make this, and it turned out better than, I think, even just the first iteration. I don't know, I never imagined it would turn into this wonderful show. I feel really grateful that I had this really great crew. A lot of them were really stoked to just keep working on stuff with me. I'm trying to find ways to do it still. So, I mean, the other thing is just that, like, running a show, I remember I talked to Penn at some point before I was done when we were
Penn
directing.
Ward, creator of Adventure Time.
Yeah. Because, like, I remember him talking to my husband about when he first started the first season of Adventure Time, how it felt like every day going up the elevator. And I remember him saying he felt like vomiting every day, like, because it was just so much you're walking into on a regular basis of people leading you to do stuff and answering things and all these questions that you need to respond to. And so I was just feeling like that. I mean, not like I was going to vomit every day, just very like anxious and kind of like, when is it going to not be this stressful? When is it going to not feel like this absurd? And he was just like, it's not really ever not going to feel like this, like running a show.
Yeah.
It's just that you'll finish it. It's going to be really great. And you're going to have this great thing. And then you're going to forget a little bit that it was like that, so that you'll do it again. And I was like, oh, that's just like having a baby.
Just like having babies. Absolutely. Wow. And recently you made a short called Mall Stories, which is similar in some ways to City of Ghosts. But tell us what Mall Stories is.
It's about the Mongolian Grill in the Burbank Mall. I was really interested in, okay, first I got interested in shopping malls over pandemic because I watched this documentary called Jasper Mall, and it was really nice. It was really soothing. It's kind of like about, generally speaking, like how shopping malls are dying out. So it's kind of showing this one that's relatively empty, and there's just sort of this one guy that's like doing everything to take care of the mall. And so I just got this idea about, I wish I could do like a short about something in the mall that I remember or love. And my husband's studio had been doing these things with Unreal where they were giving these mega grants to people to do projects. And he said, you should apply for this thing because maybe then we could make your mall project. So we did that. And then they gave us a grant. Yeah. And then I went and interviewed this family that runs the Mongolian Grill in the Burbank Mall.
Okay. Here's a clip from that video Elizabeth is talking about called Mall Stories.
I mean, it's not like any Asian father. He doesn't really show a lot of emotion, no excitement. It's either like, hey, do you want to do it or do you not want to do it? And once I told him that I'll do it, he just said, okay, then you do it. Very dry, you know, but even in that dryness, I tend to find little emotions and hints there where he's kind of proud. And I want to work hard to make him more proud and show him that, yeah, I can do this and continue the legacy, and hopefully one day he can see it and say, hey, I'm proud of you. That's kind of my goal.
Are you hoping to do more of that? Is that like a pilot kind of thing?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think it could be cool. I have other things that I think it would be cool to do with that particular project. Some of the interest for me in the what we used to make it, the Unreal Engine, was that I kind of thought it'd be really cool to just build a whole mall environment and have it be something where, like, let's say the first thing that you watch is Mall Stories. Could you then make it so that if you were, like, in a VR environment, you could, like, follow somebody from the Mall Stories to another place, or you could follow their story, or you could go into the theater in the mall and just watch something totally unrelated to being in the mall? But I think it's just this desire to maybe figure out a way to navigate how we find our stories. Like, maybe you could even just sit in the mall if you wanted to and just hang out and watch people go by.
Yeah.
I don't know. The more that I thought about it, I was like, I really get, to be honest, like a little anxious scrolling through Netflix or scrolling through the things where stuff just comes at you and starts playing. So it was like a thought of like, how couldn't I make this like an experience that is like akin to just sitting there in the mall and then you decide when you want to get up and see something.
And just so people know, what is the Unreal Engine?
Oh, it's this whole machinery that they use to make video games. So okay. Like, I think their biggest thing is like Epic Games. Most of their games are made using Unreal.
Okay.
They've just recently started using it for like animated shows and okay. Stuff like that.
It's funny when you described what this project could be, I saw your mind kind of just start to spin faster. And you're kind of, you know, we're on video with each other now, but you know, your eyes kind of darting around the room a little bit. I mean, it's such an interesting thing about art and artists, I think, how you need to make these things and they just about destroy you, but you're going for maybe like 49% destroying you, 51% not destroying you. And then as long as you keep that ratio there, then you're okay.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, yeah. Elizabeth Ito, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Elizabeth Ito. We have all kinds of links to the shows and videos we talked about here on our show page. Go check that out. And if you want to make art of any kind and you're also anxious and fearful, listen, you can make art and be anxious also. You don't have to get rid of anxiety in order to create. Because you know what? If you make something, you made something. After you did that, after you conducted this miracle, a thing exists in the world that wasn't there before, which, when you stop to think about it, is kind of amazing. Now, once it's out there, some people will love it, some might hate it, and that's often important, maybe from a professional standpoint, but not from a creative one. From a creative standpoint, it's already done. You already pulled off the miracle. The rest is just echoes. I love it when people make things. I want to take every opportunity I can to encourage people to make things. Next time on Depression Mode, there is no correlation between how good of an actor you are and how much you weigh. Absolutely zero. But when she was thinner, Lola Kirk starred in movies and TV shows. And now, not so much.
That was when it really just began to be like, oh my God, well, I want to work. I want to work. I want to be an actress. I want to do these roles. So I guess I'll have to lose all this weight. And like, that just shouldn't be the reality. But that being said, I love acting. I've spent a lot of time in my life developing these skills, and I'm confused about what to sacrifice. You know, like, do I diet so that I can continue to do this? Or do I pray that the industry changes and that women can look like anything?
Lola Kirk joins us. If people support our show, we have a show. If the support dries up, so does the show. We want to keep making it. We think it helps people. We think that you like it. So please support it. If you already support the show, wonderful. Thank you for making it happen. If you don't yet donate, it's easy to do. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. find a level that works for you, and hit the depression mode icon. Find the level that works for you, and then support the show. We really appreciate it. Be sure to hit subscribe to this podcast. That really helps us out. Also, 5-star ratings and rave reviews help us out as well. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available in the United States by calling 988. You can also call 1-800-273-8255. The Crisis text line, also free and always available. Text the word HOME to 741-741. Our electric mail address is depressionmode@maximumfun.org. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. Join in on that great discussion happening over there. You can search up our Depression Mode newsletter on Substack. Search that up, just looking for Depression Mode, or johnmo.substack.com. I'm on Twitter @johnmo. Hi, credits listeners. Adventure Time, a show Elizabeth worked on, is my favorite TV show out of all TV shows. One reason is that it's full of characters constantly trying to figure out a world they didn't design but have to live in anyway. I find that to be resonant, and they can build tree houses or candy kingdoms in this world, of course, but the world as a whole is often mind-boggling to the characters, and I dig that. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out. Building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason. Maybe there's no reason. I just keep believing. No one knows the answer. Maybe there's no answer. I just keep on dancing.
This is Sally Baker in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And my dog Danny and I are here to tell you that you deserve to be loved right now, exactly as you are.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.